Okay, we are starting a new series that I'm excited about called The Architecture of Belief. We're using architecture metaphor throughout, but we'll kind of switch up the metaphors. This morning we were also exploring networking and network programming as a way of how beliefs are formed and built. But over the coming 4 weeks, we're going to explore what we believe, how those beliefs are formed. That's kind of week one. Next week, Ruth's going to be coming, and Ruth's here, and she's going to be talking about heart knowledge, heart belief, and somatic understanding. Then we're going to be talking about barriers to belief, cognitive biases, and the like. Week three and week four, we'll talk about how beliefs change and how malleable our beliefs can be and how they calcify and harden sometimes. So each of us, we all come into this space believing hundreds, probably thousands of things. We have thousands of beliefs, but we don't often take the time to do kind of an inventory of the things we believe. We just take them on fact. But those beliefs, some we can prove, some we inherited, some we picked up along the way, in the way that you would pick up an accent, some we inherited from family, and most of the time you don't experience those beliefs as beliefs. You experience them as reality. You take them for reality. And the big idea probably this week, if you were to boil it down to something, would be this, that beliefs for us, they feel like conclusions, but they're actually constructions. They're formed. They're built. Beliefs are built. Much in the same way that if you've ever built a house or had a house built for you, and you know and trust that there is an architect who has designed the house and a general contractor, and they're constructing the house in such a way that it can be load-bearing, supporting, and it's a structure that is built. So today's talk is less about beliefs that are correct and which beliefs are correct, because I find those conversations far less interesting. I've come from a background, and especially within some circles of Christianity, there is a discipline of apologetics, backing up what you believe in an argument. And growing up, I was taught to defend the things I believed. There is a verse that sticks out in my head from the many times I was taught it that says, "Study to show yourself approved as a good workman who does not need to be ashamed." So I inherited this belief, not only that I had these beliefs, but that my beliefs required defense, required to be backed up and supported. So I've spent time defending beliefs and arguing beliefs and which belief is accurate and which is rooted in which evidence and how you interpret those evidence. And those conversations can be entertaining to watch in the way that you would watch a WWE wrestling match. And I would watch them now the same way, because really all that you're doing is just slinging this rhetoric back and forth. I find it far more interesting to do self-examination and interior work and ask yourself the questions, what do I believe? Where did those beliefs come from? How did I inherit them? Which beliefs are serving me now? Have any of them changed? Have I outgrown them? So let's first start by exploring exactly what is a belief. So for the purposes of our conversation, we'll say that a belief is a mental model which we treat as true and that we use to interpret reality and decide what to do with what's next. It's a mental model that we use to interpret reality. It's a mental model that we treat as true. Notice I said we treat it as true, not that it is true. That's because we believe all sorts of things. Remember I said in the beginning, we believe thousands of things. We also believe quite a few things that don't have basis in reality or truth. We may believe things that are not true. And here's the funny thing about the way that our brain processes reality, is that it doesn't matter whether the thing that we believe is true or not. Even if it is not true, our brain treats it as if it is true. I used to do an illustration with this talk, and this was fun to do in my youth ministry days, where you would get a student to come up here and you'd set them on the stage and you'd blindfold them and you'd say, okay, I brought something here. And then you bring out this box and it's this like cardboard sized box. And then, you know, you make a big deal. You show them, you know, I'm gonna show you what's in this box. You blindfold them and then you begin to communicate with the audience. You say, when I open the box, everybody like gasp and stuff. And you do that and everybody gasps. And then you stand behind them and then you just simply have to do this, right? On there, and they will freak out. And the illustration, of course, is that it doesn't matter whether that was a real spider or not. If you believe that to be true, your brain processes it and treats it as if it were true. And you are affected in much the same way as if you actually had a tarantula crawling on your arm. So another way of thinking about it is this. A belief is just simply a thought, something that we think, and the more that we think it over and over, we keep reinforcing it until it's hardwired. It begins to wear a groove into our thought pattern. So there's many examples of beliefs, and we're going to talk about big beliefs, cornerstone beliefs, and supporting beliefs. But let's look at some examples of some things that we believe. Things like people are basically trustworthy. That was an example that somebody gave this morning. That's such a simple statement that determines much of how we operate in the world. Or said another way, to say that the world is a safe place. This is a safe place for me to exist and be. And maybe you've never stopped to explore that belief because you've never had that belief challenged. Whereas people of color, people from oppressed backgrounds, know what it feels like to be in a place and not feel safe. So our beliefs are inherited, they're reinforced by our own experiences and nervous system beliefs. There are things that we believe in our body. We talked last week and we quoted from Vanderbilt's The Body Keeps the Score book. We absorb information and beliefs, and we don't just believe them as mental constructs. They affect us somatically. As a matter of fact, Ruth would maybe make the case next week that there are deeper ways of knowing things than simple head knowledge. That until we can move it from our head into our heart and absorb that into ourselves, that perhaps they're simply mental constructs. We'll explore that more next week. So things like the world is a safe place, or people are basically good, or you get what you give. Pineapple is an excellent pizza topping. We'll agree to disagree. Beliefs are these funny thing, right? They don't have to be true. A lie, even believed as true, affects us as if it were true. So how do these beliefs form? Well, remember I said they're built. They're not discovered. We like to think of ourselves as rational beings who do all the appropriate research, we get all of our sources, and we analytically approach things, and then we form conclusions, and those conclusions result in firmly held beliefs. And some of the longest firmly held beliefs that we have turn into values that guide in how we live our lives. That's how we think we function in this world. In reality, people who study how beliefs form and how knowledge form, and within the schools of thought, there's this big word called epistemology. Epistemology, which is simply, how do we know what we know? How do we come to the conclusions that we come to? How do we determine things that are genuinely and empirically true? And here's what we know, is that as human beings, we like to think of ourselves as rational, scientific people. But more often than not, we find ourselves emotionally connecting with beliefs that have either been given to us that we have inherited, or especially if that belief comes with strong emotional connection, we will then take those beliefs and work like hell to support those beliefs and then reinforce our conclusions about those beliefs until ultimately we determine that those things are true. We actually find ourselves as people who crave understanding. Belief doesn't exist in isolation. They stack, they build on one another, which is why we're using this language of belief architecture. Your belief architecture represents your understanding of the world. Said another way, it could be a worldview. The worldview that you develop, the worldview you hold at this time in your life, has changed over time. It's formed from your experience, from things you've inherited, things you've read, and things that you mentally reinforce to determine what is true. Different beliefs serve different roles within our belief architecture. There are cornerstone beliefs, or said another way, I would almost describe them as load-bearing beliefs. Anybody who's worked in construction knows, you know, a load-bearing wall, or if you've done any renovations, right? You've walked through your house with a contractor, and we're like, I'm thinking of knocking out this wall and expanding here, and they're like, no, you can't touch this wall. This is a load-bearing wall. If you affect that wall, that affects the entire structure, right? So some of our beliefs are these cornerstone beliefs, these foundational beliefs, these load-bearing beliefs, big load-bearing claims upon which hundreds of other beliefs rely. Things like people are fundamentally good. From that core belief, we develop worldviews and morality and outlooks. We determine how people should be treated based on these core foundational beliefs. Some of these cornerstone beliefs can be rather innocent, seemingly on the surface, but can affect us in big ways. Things like, I'm not a creative person. Anybody who's ever heard Beth talk or have seen Bill's photography or Beth's or some of our other creative people in this community, we think, that's amazing. I'm so glad they can do that. I'm not like that. I'm not creative. That's a core belief. That's a foundational belief. More often than not, that we inherited somewhere along the line, probably in school, may have been reinforced from our peers or our parents or our teachers, but we inherit that, and it becomes a part of our identity to the point where we don't even notice it, but it stands as an obstacle in our growth and development because it prevents us from trying new things, expanding in new areas, because that core foundational belief is limiting us. Then there are these supporting beliefs. These are beliefs that stack on top. Remember I said beliefs are built. They're constructed. Supporting beliefs are easier to spot because they often feel like opinions rather than the capital T truth. These are things that we have opinions on, and they may not be as strong, but they're supporting beliefs that are anchored by some form of foundational or load-bearing belief. These would be things like exercise is important for my mental health, which is built on a foundation of how we believe our mind and body work together and the importance of the mind-body connection. or a supporting belief that says creative people have something that I don't, or artists have some genuine innate ability that I don't have. And then finally, there are floating beliefs, or I've heard these called comet beliefs. They're not anchored to anything, but they can just be something that we exist, or that exists within our atmosphere. Sometimes seemingly intelligent people can hold these really strange out there beliefs that are not connected to anything. And that's because we're all interesting, unique human beings with a unique backstory. And sometimes we just have these interesting crosses. And it could be something from tarot cards and horoscopes to bad things come in three, knocking on wood. These things that we hold to be true, or beliefs that we're not really ready to die for to defend. But they're anchored out there. They're floating in these beliefs. So as we look at some examples of this cornerstone belief, one would be a cornerstone belief of saying there is a God who created me, who has a plan for myself in this world. This would be a cornerstone belief within a great deal of Christian cultures and churches that is taken at face value to be a foundational belief, along with the fact that scriptures were written, inspired by God. These foundational religious beliefs stack on top of one another. But then we use those foundational beliefs to support other beliefs. If we believe that God created me and has a plan for my life, remember these beliefs are mental constructs that we treat as true and we use them to interpret reality. So if we believe that God has a plan for my life, then when I'm in an accident and when I'm in the hospital, I'm interpreting that situation in a different way, and my beliefs about the situation, my belief about the things that are happening, keep going back to that anchoring foundational belief. There's a God who is personally concerned with my life, supporting belief, therefore, things happen for a reason. Therefore, then, suffering, coincidence, death, and morality all get interpreted downstream from that belief. In The Believing Brain, Michael Shermer, he writes about the way that we form beliefs and how we tend to back those beliefs up and defend them because they become part of our identity. He says this: once beliefs are formed, the brain looks for and finds confirmation evidence in support of those beliefs, which adds an emotional boost or further confidence in the beliefs, and thereby accelerates the process of reinforcing them. And round the process goes in a positive feedback loop of belief confirmation. Once a cornerstone belief is in place, the structure begins to reinforce itself, to support itself, to protect itself. The beliefs we build shape our perception of reality, and not the other way around. Michael Shermer says this. He says, reality exists independent of human minds, but our understanding of it depends upon the beliefs that we hold at any given time. How we interpret situations depends on the beliefs that we hold. Most of us think that we believe because we saw the evidence, but more often than not, the belief becomes the lens which decides the evidence. We didn't wake up and choose our beliefs. More often than not, we wake up inside of them. And we don't realize we hold them until we take the time to do an examination. Because the beliefs we build, we reinforce. And this is the part that is so difficult when it comes to examining beliefs. We like to think of ourselves as objective witnesses. Anybody now realizes or knows that the objective witness simply doesn't exist. And even within trials of law, we now realize how fallible human memory and the construction of events actually is. You can have five people that witness the same event and remember different details, contradictory details. We know that people can be led to remember things that didn't happen by leading questions. There are all sorts of fallibilities within the way that we construct memories and hold our beliefs. And what makes them especially difficult is that our brain reinforces those memories because our brain just loves the feeling of being right. If there's anything that it rewards the feeling of being confirmed to believe something that is true. We love the feeling of listening to someone expound on a belief that we hold so that we can confirm that belief through our peer support. We will intentionally surround ourselves with people who share our worldviews, who align with our most core beliefs, our most foundational beliefs. And then we reinforce those beliefs. And round we go. Within the neurochemistry cocktail that our brain concocts, there is this neurochemical called dopamine that is used by the brain as a reinforcing tool to reinforce habits and learning and behavior. And our brains evolved in such a way to survive. And if you pick a berry and you remember that that berry nurtured you and fed you and didn't make you sick, you can hold that as a belief and say, this berry is good, it's safe and nutritious to eat. And you remember those things, and those become a part of the way that you form identity. And when you reinforce those beliefs, that's your brain's way of helping to really make them stick. The more important it is, the more that you want it to stick. Because a belief, another way of saying that, is just simply something that we think over and over and over enough until it becomes something that we believe to be true. And what the brain does is uses these cues of dopamine to reinforce belief integration. When we listen to an opinion expounded upon, when we listen to commentary, when we read books that back up the things that we believe, we feel good because our brain gives bursts of dopamine to reinforce those ideas. So we have to be intentional about examining not just what we believe, why we believe it, and where those beliefs come from. This is a worthwhile practice for everyone, but especially a spiritual community like ours, especially when we come from so many different places. Remember, this isn't about trying to deconstruct your beliefs. It's not about intentionally throwing the baby out with the bathwater and starting from scratch. But it is allowing yourself to sit comfortably with curiosity and asking, where did the beliefs that I hold come from? Do they serve me? What does it do for me? How does it contribute to my health, my well-being, to my safety, my identity, to my meaning? And what would feel threatened if this belief were challenged or changed? What in me wants to defend my beliefs, and how do I react? Remember, as with all things, we're coming at this with a lens of curiosity, not judgment. We're not demolishing the house. We're looking at how it was built. Because beliefs feel like reality because they are not just ideas. They're structures that we build, structures that we reinforce, and that's why they feel so certain. And that certainty can feel so, so good, as David talked about. It is helpful when we feel so certain about things. But the longer we live and the more that we come to grips with the beliefs that we hold, we learn to hold strong beliefs held loosely with an open mind and a willingness to grow. I hope this series is a good launching pad for some conversations. I know there's probably about a quarter of what I was going to talk about this morning that I actually got to. So obviously, we're either going to have to either expand this a little bit or come back to this. These are some interesting conversations to have. And I hope, especially next week, that you'll come for Ruth, because she's going to be coming at this from a very, very different but very necessary and important approach, which is that indigenous understanding of moving from headspace to heart space, which is really, really difficult, especially for Westerners and those like us. So that'll be next week. But in the meantime, let's invite Kevin and Scott back up here to play. And as they're coming on stage, let's give them one more hand, because I have thoroughly enjoyed this this pairing. Kevin, as was mentioned, has been our sound guy here for a while now. And as I come in the mornings and help set up, I enjoy my conversations about all sorts of things that we talk about beforehand. So it's fun to get to see his creative side that we don't always get to see. And then Scott, I can't tell you how much I enjoy having some strong percussion drums. And I noticed you brought a very, very small kick drum, which is appropriate to the size of our and age of our space. So hopefully we can expand from here and maybe like open ourselves up to bigger kick drums in the future. But thank you so much, guys. It's been good to have you. Thanks for this conversation.